We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the unceded lands this podcast is recorded from, the Yugambeh and Cammeraygal peoples.
We pay our respects to the elders of past and present and celebrate the diversity of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples and their ongoing cultures and connection to country.
You're listening to the Mum's Gone Climbing podcast.
We're on a mission to deliver high-quality climbing and adventure resources to badass climbing mamas.
And redefine motherhood one episode at a time.
With incredible guests.
Very bad humour.
And just enough Kleenex moments to keep things interesting.
So grab yourself a cuppa or plug us in on the way to the crag.
As we bring you the latest beta from the Mum's Gone Climbing crew.
Hi guys, welcome to the show. I am Eva Rosenbaum.
And I am Nell Gow, and we will be your hosts for today's episode of the Mum's Gone Climbing podcast with the incredible Carly Le Breton, who's been a huge part of the Australian climbing scene since the 90s and now is a world-class route setter.
Yeah, what an incredible guest to open series 5, episode 41 of the podcast with.
Oh my gosh.
I know. I can't believe it. And, you know, a massive thank you to our beautiful audience for loving us enough to get us this far. All the gratitude for the wonderful humans and guests that we've had on the podcast who make these chats so special. At 41, that's huge.
I know. Like, this podcast is kind of as old as us now.
I was just thinking it's literally... That's me, 41.
I'm not sure if that's how it works, but I like
I like the link.
I like the link. No, it's so good and it does feel so special. I know. We say this to each other all the time, like how we just feel so lucky to be part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a privilege. And I have to say, it's such a privilege that here we are recording both with some form of viral illness. We live in separate states, but we've both managed to.
I know. I think poor Eva's got it a lot worse than me. She's been kind of in bed for the last 4 days, but I woke up with a sore throat and a snotty nose, and I was like, oh, should we push this episode back a couple of days? But Eva's just a trooper. She's like, nah, let's do it, let's get it done. So if we sound a little bit croaky and you hear a couple of sniffles, we've just got the viruses.
All the wonderful viruses.
Also, if you love listening along to the podcast, to all these conversations, we're going to ask you a little favor. First, go and give us a rating on your favorite app. And secondly, choose your favorite episode, you know, the one that really resonated with you, and send it to someone who you will think will love it too. That would be absolutely amazing.
It would be. And we've also... seeing, you know, how much everyone loves the podcast, if you want to wear it on your t-shirt, we've got a special merch code to celebrate our 5th series. It's 20% off all gear. So head to the website mumsgoneclimbing.com and use the code MGCPOD5 at the checkout.
Yeah, I'll make sure I pop those ones in the notes, but go check it out. We've got t-shirts and hoodies and long sleeve tops. We even got like a little cute little baby jumpsuit in there now.
I want the baby jumpsuit. I'm going to get it.
You should. There's a few colours. It's very cute. Go check it out. Also, before we get really rolling into it, it's time to say a huge, huge, huge thank you to our wonderful sponsors. Urban Climb and Climbing Anchors have come on board again. They've been supporting this podcast for the last 4 series, and we can't really say how grateful we are for their support.
No, absolutely. We simply couldn't do it without their support. And they're just, they're incredible people to work with. We all know the wonderful Climbing Anchors. They have stores across New South Wales and Victoria. So Alexandria, and mini stores at 9 Degrees in Lane Cove and Waterloo, and at Fitzroy in Victoria. They also have a dedicated code just for our listeners. It gives you 12.5% off everything in store and online, except for sale items, which is pretty epic. The code is 20MGC24, and we'll put that in the show notes as well.
We're so lucky. Get a special code and everything.
I know. It's so special.
Urban Climb, another one of our favorites. They have gyms in Brisbane, in Melton, Newstead, and West End, and up in Townsville. and also down in Victoria at Collingwood and Blackburn. We had our very first Mum's Gone Climbing meetup at the Urban Newstead Gym way back in 2018, which I can't believe is 6 years ago. It just blows my mind. And yeah, like their gyms are still home for so many of our MGC members and meetups. At the West End Gym now, they've got a Mama and Bubba's group that comes in a couple of days a week, and they've actually set up like a massive playpen area so the kiddos can play on the ground and like not get in harm's way. So it's so lovely how much they've welcomed our community. Okay, let's have a chat about this episode with Carly, because I want to know, like, Eva, because we haven't really had a good chat, you and I, since we've recorded, but what did you think about the conversation with Carly?
I really loved hearing Carly's perspective on how the climbing world and the competition world and even the, like, you know, like the commercial side of it in terms of gyms opening up everywhere has changed over the last 30 years. And even though, you know, I have no level to compare myself on when it comes to Carly, I was like, oh, it's so cool hearing from someone who remembers, like, you know, 30 years ago when climbing gyms were kind of hardly around, right? Like, it's not like it is now with bouldering gyms popping up everywhere, and, you know, it's so different. So it was really special to hear how she's sort of grown with the industry and what she's learned from it, and then what, you know, how she's grown as a person and what she's then given back to the industry. It was super cool, very cool chat.
It was so nice to have this longer conversation with Carly, because I guess I've kind of like watched her on social media for quite a few years now, and she's such a humble and modest person, which just shines so brightly.
Massively, yeah.
She's just so lovely and so wonderful. But she's just been such an integral part of the climbing scene in Australia, and, yeah, particularly the competition scene. But she's such a strong climber, so still such a strong climber, and yet, I don't know, she's just so humble about it all. Like you were saying, we are nowhere near the level that Carly's at. You know, she's route setting at World Championship. She's like climbing, you know, above 30, projecting above 30, Australian grade scale. But it was just like talking to someone, you know, one of our good friends. Just,
yeah, exactly.
So much of it resonated, and it was such a nice conversation. So yeah, we'll drop into the episode, and we hope you love it as much as what we did.
Carly, a massive welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We're very excited for this chat. I thought we'd start by giving you the opportunity to sort of tell us about who you are, what you do, and, you know, why we've got you on the podcast.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So I own, you know, one of the shareholders at Sydney Indoor Climbing Gym. I've been climbing for many, many years. I was just saying to my husband this morning, I'm like calculating the years, and I'm like, oh my God, it's almost 30 years next year I've been climbing.
Wow.
And I've always just like said, oh yeah, about 20 years, but no, it's like almost 30 years now.
And going strong?
Yeah. Had a few on and offs, but 30 years of experience. So I'm the director here at Sydney Indoor Climbing Gym Villawood. And I do all the day-to-day running, managing, and I'm also head setter. I set internationally for the IFFC for paraclimbing, and I pretty well set every comp in Australia as well. Majority, let's say majority comps in Australia.
So just a couple of things that you do.
Yeah, and I climb as well. I try and get out regularly, once twice a week, and training when I can.
Amazing. And you're a mum.
Yes, I'm a mum. Yeah. I have two stepdaughters and a son.
Oh, and your son's, is he 9 or 10 now?
Nine.
Yeah. And how old are your stepdaughters?
They're 23 and 24.
Oh, so grown up.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
yeah.
The eldest one has just moved back home, so we're like house full of four adults and a 9-year-old, and it's like, it's crazy.
Oh my gosh. I remember my early 20s. I was in and out of home so much. Just like, adventure, back home to recuperate.
Restock.
Totally. And that's what they're doing, which is amazing. That's, you know, all we've hoped for.
Yeah. I hope for the same, to be honest, when my two are at that stage, that they'll keep dropping back in and sharing their adventures.
Yeah, but then also going off and enjoying the world and coming back when you have to.
Yeah, 100%. And, yeah, so you just finished setting for the state titles in New South Wales, didn't you, as well?
Yep. So we had state titles here at Villawood. I was the head setter. We had a really cool, fun team. And it was exciting. The numbers were like low compared to like bouldering comps at the moment. So we kind of got to work out a way to make lead climbing more popular again.
Yeah. I think we're kind of digressing from where I was like going to go with the conversation, but I want to ask the question.
Yeah.
Why do you think rope climbing, lead climbing isn't as popular these days?
It's the boom of bouldering gyms. Like I would say, or definitely, you know, bouldering so much more accessible to people. For kids, you know, parents can sit and watch. They don't need to belay. You don't need harnesses. It's cheaper, and yeah, it's easier.
Just more convenient, more accessible. Yeah, it's true, because it's funny. Like on the Gold Coast, we've had so many bouldering gyms pop up, and I like to go and have a boulder occasionally, but I much prefer sport climbing on so many levels, just like physically and mentally, the motion of it all.
Yeah, me too.
All of it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think, you know, the new school boulder problems, they don't favour the body as much. And so being a bit older, it's kind of like, I just want to pull hard and, you know, do some moves rather than run and jump and skate across a volume or, yeah, I don't want to die skating across a volume.
Yeah, totally.
Or, like, blow out your ACL, because all I see at the moment in women's sport is everyone blowing out their ACLs in climbing.
Yeah.
All of it.
Yeah, wow.
No, but I actually totally agree, because I do enjoy that pushing it harder thing for myself, but I won't do it bouldering because it's too important that I don't get injured to be able to do the rest of my life and also just to be able to keep climbing. So, yeah, it's really interesting that you said that as well. I feel the same. and it's actually quite funny about you talking about how many years you've been climbing, because I was listening to the podcast you did recently. Oh, my gosh, the podcast name has actually just totally escaped me.
That's not real climbing.
That's it. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. And you were talking about, I've been climbing for 20 years, and I'm like doing the math in my head. And I'm like,
well, that's just what I thought until this morning. I actually worked it out.
Because I was like, she was still in school. And, you know, I know Carly's like, you know, a couple of years older than me now. So I'm like,
yeah, I'm actually only 33.
Yeah. I was like, she seems to be missing a whole decade.
We could do that, can't we?
Totally.
Time does fly. But I would really love to ask you about how you initially found climbing and what those first few years were like when you started working in a gym, when you started setting, and then as a young athlete, because you were competing internationally as well as a young athlete. So if you can like share that little bit of your story, that would be awesome.
Yeah. So I started climbing in 95, which was like the start of like climbing gyms kind of starting to open up around different states. And Hangdog had just opened in 94, I think. So it was only like a year out. And I feel quite lucky to be part of that history of the climbing gyms starting out and climbing becoming popular and growing and seeing new people get into the sport. But also as a gym owner now, like I see that every day with climbing getting more popular. So it's like it really hasn't changed a lot. Yeah, so I was year eight, so like 13, 14, and I picked climbing as a school sport, like a weekly school sport that went to Hangdog. And so I picked that, and then I didn't pick another sport after that. I went to Hang Dog every Tuesday for until I was like in year 11. I didn't have to pick a sport. And I was like, and then that's when I was like, worked at Hang Dog as well. So it's like the owners were just like, well, if you're not going to do the sport, can you just come in and work then? Yeah, why not? I might as well get paid. So part of that was, you know, being, because in Hang Dog's in Wollongong, you know, I grew up at Nowra. So climbing like short, steep, powerful sport routes. So I got to be part of that boom. You know, there was a lot of new routes happening. You know, climbing grades were kind of taking off and being pushed throughout. So a lot of those routes are really historical moments in climbing, which was cool as a up-and-coming climber to see and to, you know, have those inspirations along the way. And then with competitions was, you know, starting to boom as well, but there wasn't the people there. I was only, you know, 14, 15, and there was no other juniors really competing. It was so new and fresh. So I had to compete in opens a lot of the time. And I think I won my first open event in 96.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like
2 years after you started climbing.
2 years after, yeah. So it was kind of like, you know, quite fresh. 15, I think I was, you know, competing against women. It was like, it was tricky. Yeah, it was full on. And then I was national champion for like 6 years in a row.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So winning nationals, and I also got to compete in a couple of international events as a youth climber in the US. And I won my second year in that. So I was like in the 18, 19 category, like a junior category. And I did my HSC in San Francisco. Just after winning that event, I had to go to the embassy and like sit for my HSC, which I failed because I was like away competing and climbing. So in hindsight, I should have just like totally forgot about it and just went rock climbing anyway. But so that's pretty well my junior years. I started setting a Hang Dog as well in those early days because, you know, if you worked on the counter, you also set. We didn't really have that position of a setter as such. You know, you're just, okay, you're working on the counter where you need to set a couple of routes tonight. and that's what we did.
Yeah. I think that was the way a lot of gyms were running up until I would anticipate quite recently, really.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There wasn't these dedicated setting teams that came in and like rolled through.
I think maybe it was like 2010-ish that I reckon there was dedicated setters.
That's so incredible that you know, you were so young and going overseas and doing all these things. I don't even know how you could have concentrated after winning a comp like that and then like having to sit down and concentrate and do your HSC.
Well, yeah, if you look at my results, I didn't really.
Just be like, yeah. I'm too excited for this, sorry.
I don't even think I read the book that was that English exam.
You so were prioritizing.
Yeah,
that's right, yeah. I think it's a much better experience.
Oh, 100%.
If my kids were like, you know, in that situation, you'd be like, maybe just don't do your HSC and you can go back. I went back and did it later.
I was going to say in Australia, I'm not sure what it's like around the world, but in Australia, if you do want to go back and focus on studies after not so much focusing on studies, there's quite easy pathways to get through. So it's not really that big of a deal.
Yeah, yeah. I think I did it back at TAFE when I was about 22, 23. I went back, yeah, because I was injured from climbing and I'm like, oh, well, I might as well do something.
I'll do it now while I can't climb. But it speaks to, like, what happens when you follow a passion, right? Because it sounds like you fell in love with climbing as soon as you started, and here you are 30 years later doing some pretty incredible things.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I yeah, I was thinking about that this morning. You know, I never really got a degree or anything like that, but, you know, just climbing took me to so many places and gave me the opportunities that, you know, I have today.
Let's talk some more about that, because you were chief setter at the Paraclimbing World Cup.
Yeah, I've done a few World Cups and then the World Championships.
So tell us a bit about the challenges that you face when you're setting for paraclimbers, and like what are you excited about in terms of how that aspect of climbing is, what the future looks like for paraclimbing?
I think like the future is the Olympics. Like if paraclimbing could get into the Olympics, that would be amazing. Like just like when we kind of found out climbing was going to be in the Olympics, it was like the next step for any sport, you know, is to be in the Olympic environment. But then also same as able bottle climbing, you know, seeing the youth come through. And I think at the moment we're, you know, para athletes are a little bit older. We need to focus on the youth and preparing the kids for the Olympics. So that's what I'm excited about, is to see the kids.
It's been really cool to see, because I guess I probably came aware of the paraclimbing community when I connected with Rachel Meyer, who you know, obviously. And even, so that was probably 5 years ago that I started to follow her and communicate with her. And just to see how much it's grown, you know, like since Sarah's come in Australia, and like the community's getting bigger and bigger, and the amount of competitors that are now like competing at paraclimbing events.
Yeah. So just at state titles, we had para category, and we had 12 athletes, and that's the most we've ever had. So normally it's like, you know, three or four people, but we had 12. So then I had to like actually split them into the IFFC categories, because I couldn't put them all on the same route, which is like what we normally do, because there was just so many grade range abilities within those 12 people. So that was exciting to have enough people to split.
I just got goosebumps, because like, you know, 3 or 4 to 12 is such a huge jump. And can you like imagine where that's going to go in the next 5 years? It's
yeah.
And especially if it does get named on the, it would it be the 2028 Olympics, wouldn't it, if it was going to?
Yeah, there's hope for the LA one. So that'd be exciting. I think even at the World Championships was a, like last year was record numbers.
Yeah, it seemed to be. I watched it along for a bit of it, not for all of it, but I was just like, wow, so many athletes.
So many athletes, which is awesome.
So what do you what have you found? Because I think you've been setting for paraclimbing for quite some time now. What have you found like the biggest challenges have been, and you know, like how has the setting side of it grown in, you know, the last kind of 10 years or so?
Yeah, it's always a bit of a challenge because, you know, we're an able body trying to climb a para route. So we're always kind of, you know, trying to climb it with like missing a limb or with less range of movement. But those athletes actually climb way better with their classification than we do. They're way stronger at it. So that would be the first challenge, is just making sure the route fits the category. And as the sport grows, you know, we have less and less merging happening in the categories. So that's the other kind of challenge of each comp, is like who's going to be merged together. And then you have like a huge grade range on the routes. But as it becomes more popular, that's less and less likely happening. And in the World Champs, I think, you know, we had no merging.
Yeah, that's really amazing, because then I guess, like, as you said, you can kind of set for each category more specifically, and that's going to be able to like push those categories to do, you know, the best of that they can achieve.
Yeah, you're setting for the lower limb category, the upper limb. You're not having to put them together and have like a, you know, a route that's like a little bit on the easier side to like up onto the harder side to, you know, for the for the AL2 males, so lower limb, you know, we're setting like 29-30 now. Those guys are crushing it. It's exciting. And I think from when I started setting 3 years ago with the IFFC, you know, we've just slowly been pushing up those grades of those final routes. And it's really cool to see that it's like, oh, okay, let's bump it up another grade and see how it goes.
That's it. It's like, wow, there's too many of you reaching the top. We've got to make this more challenging.
Yeah. They're just getting stronger and stronger. So it's really cool.
Yeah. Oh, that's so exciting for the sport. It's awesome to hear. I guess, you know, you've been a female setter in this industry since you were a teenager. What's it been like being a woman and being a setter in this space that is often male dominated? Well, you can definitely say it is because you became like the first female chief setter only last year at the World Championships, which is such a huge honor. I was so excited for you when I saw that you'd got that position. But yes, how has it been like as a female in that space, and how do you think that's changed over, you know, over the course that you've been setting?
Yeah, it's definitely changed, like as the sport's got more popular and we've had, like, you know, we can make a career out of setting now as well. So it's like it gives people more option. But also, like, back in the day, you know, I was probably the only female setting. You know, there might have been a couple at some local gyms. But in terms of setting at comps, you know, I was the one that was doing it. And a lot of the time we didn't actually have any males that wanted to set for comps because everyone was competing. So it was like, and in one way I kind of like fell into the position of, like, you know, setting for nationals and states because I, you know, Rob and I were running SCA. So it was kind of like, okay, we need setters for the nationals, but there wasn't really any. So it was like, okay, well, you know, I've got to do it. You know, I was setting at the time, so it's fine.
Yeah, wow.
But then as climbing got more popular, then the position started to be filled with males, and I was like the only female. And, you know, I've had incidents where, you know, you do feel like the token female, but also I've set with a lot of great males that have been really, like, understanding, and they want to make this environment comfortable for everyone. So there's always chat back and forth about different things. But mainly, like, setting with a team, you just want everyone to be able to have a chat about the routes and everyone be on the same level with, you know, we need to get this job done. You know, we need to make sure the routes work for everyone. So everyone tests, everyone tries them, everyone sets. You know, I've definitely had my ups and downs. But as the industry grows, it's definitely a lot better.
Would you say more ups than downs, or, like, were there particular challenges that stood out?
Yeah, I'd say more ups. Like, I definitely had some great male friends that I've worked with in setting. There's been a few incidents where you're like, okay, I'm trying to open a female boulder and I can't do it. You know, I'm probably at the same level as these females. And, you know, if I can't do this move, then maybe we should tweak it a little bit. And I've been outspoken, been like, no, like, it'll be fine. And then you kind of, that's probably the instance where you're like, okay, well, I'm just a token female here, aren't I?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And it's like I couldn't actually physically reach one of the moves. And it's like, oh, we should change that. You know, a lot of the field is shorter. And then it turned out that one girl did that move and she was like 6 foot.
So is there acknowledgement then after of like, Carly, you were right? Or is it just ignored?
No, totally ignored.
That must infuriate you.
Yeah, it did. Probably later now that I'm older.
It's true, right? The older you get, the less you're going to tolerate.
Yeah, for sure. And you kind of think about those instances and I think back then I was just like, oh, well, it was just in the moment, and, like, you kind of make excuses around that for them, for the people I was working with. And, you know, we were setting late at night and everyone was tired, and so maybe there was that factor. But then you look back at it now, like being, you know, a bit older and a bit wiser, you're like, oh no, that was pretty shit. Yeah. But oh well, you know, it happened and we learned from that, and if that ever happened again, I would be like, hey, no, that's not right.
That was going to be my next question. Like, now with reflection and time and hindsight, can you see yourself naturally responding differently?
Oh, totally. Yeah, yeah. And now that, you know, I have more experience in that environment as well.
Yeah.
You could be like, okay, no, this is definitely not right. Let's just try and add a foothold or whatever, and let me try it and let's just see. And I think that's one thing I'm, you know, realizing now, that hopefully I can encourage other females to just stand up a little bit and just have the chat and have the conversation with people. And it's probably just what I didn't do back then.
It's a theme we've had a lot on the podcast, isn't it, now?
Yeah. It's interesting. I guess I'd like to ask you, because, you know, we're all, you know, in our 40s now, and, well, I'm almost there. but I definitely am more outspoken in all levels of my life than I used to be. But a little bit like you, Carly, like things that happened in the past, at the time I was probably like, oh, that felt a bit gross, but didn't say anything and didn't really think much of it. But when you look back, older, wiser, more knowledgeable, I guess more sure in yourself and in your confidence and your own opinions, you kind of go, oh, why didn't I say anything?
Yeah.
Do you find, but I also think the world has changed a lot in respect to just women's positions in society and how much we speak out. Do you find the younger women coming up are more outspoken than you would have been?
Yeah, I was thinking about that the other day, because I'm running some workshops, some setting workshops here at Villawood, while we've got some blank wall to fill in. And I definitely have noticed that the younger generation, you know, they don't mind talking about how they're feeling, and I think it's great, and it's like, I think I'm learning from it to be a little bit more open with myself around them and around anybody, really. Like, you know, the whole set team, you know, you can tell them how you're feeling, or like, oh, hey, you know, I'm having a really bad day and I'm not working this problem out, or, you know, can someone just help me figure out this move or whatever. But, you know, back 10 years ago, you would be like, oh no, I can't say that, you know, I've got to get the climb up on the wall and it's got to be good, or people are going to say something or whatever. But I think, we're learning from the younger generation about being a bit more open.
That's really awesome to hear. I love that. Yeah, that there is that progress. And it's really nice, because I think a lot of the time in the past, and Eva, you might be able to speak to this a bit better, especially with your profession as a doctor and that sort of thing, it's just kind of like you suck it up and you get it done. And to show like any sort of emotion is to show a weakness, whereas I think that's changed now.
Yeah, totally.
I wish it had totally changed. It's changing.
Changing.
if you're talking about medicine.
Yeah, I was going to say medicine's changing. There is obviously more layers of complexity there.
But I think part of it, you know, part of it is like that experience aspect, right, where you're just trying to work yourself up through the ranks to acquire the necessary experience to sort of, you know, be considered, I guess, an expert in, you know, your practice. Mm. But there's definitely a gender component. There's certainly areas of medicine that are far more male dominant. And, you know, when you say, Carly, that like you look back on how you reacted, you know, 20 years ago and compare it to now, and it makes you cranky, like it makes you angry. Like that very much, I resonate with that a lot, because, you know, I think there are so many times that you put your head down and you be quiet for the sake of moving up. And that that sort of sense of compromising yourself, I find horrible now. Like I can't do it anymore. And so the older I get, the more I really need to sort of toe this line, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's like when you have those people ask you like questions like, oh, if you could write a letter to your younger self, what you would just say? And of course it's going to be like, oh yeah, you know, try and be more, you know, stronger with how you feel and let people know. And yeah, but I think the younger generation are definitely doing that already.
Which I suppose speaks to change, which is fantastic. But it's confronting to think about when you're like, wait, I'm not the younger generation anymore, you know? I'm the person going, back in my day.
It's
very confronting.
I think what's nice though, and it's like obviously all of us, we're all mothers now. And I think our generation has grown so much. And now the way that we are parenting our children are bringing up these, you know, men and women who are much more articulate in how they're feeling and putting their voice forward and that sort of thing. So like, we're still part of it. It's just like, we're kind of like more of the nurturers of that sort of thing and learning from them, which is really cool.
We are going to wrap up our conversation with Carly there. Carly will be back with us for episode 2 of season 5. That airs in 3 weeks. In the meantime, we will be announcing some of our very special guests for the rest of the season over the next few weeks. So keep your eyes peeled. There are some incredible climbing mamas coming on. Thank you so much to our fabulous listeners for following along. We'd love to hear from you. Drop us a line if anything resonated with you. Otherwise, we will see you guys in 3 weeks.